Inside the Cross Podcast.
Thanks for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse MCLA Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined as always by David Franklin. However, not as always, we are as much deep into college basketball as we are college lacrosse right now. Dave, you know, you're swimming in March Madness over there at CBS Studios. How are you holding yourself together, my man?
I'm trying really hard, and if it's really hard to really keep track of all these days, but I think for CBS now, debut of the Arena Football League this Saturday, so I guess I'm kind of playing a human game of Twister with one leg in lacrosse, one leg in basketball, and I guess my left arm in some arena football. But it's getting exciting as the tournament progresses. It actually makes my job easier as teams progress. We've had some pretty exciting games so far, and it's always nice to really immerse yourself in college sports culture, whether it's on the 120 yards that make up a lacrosse field or the basketball hardwood.
No question, and for me, you know, coming back from Denver, being out there for the Whitman Sampler Mile High Classic, unbelievable overtime game for the folks that didn't see it, as Notre Dame was able to escape with a victory against the Denver Pioneers, and then getting ready, switching gears, turn around this weekend, the Conn-McMinolta Faceoff Classic at M&T Bank Stadium on Saturday. It's a triple header. We've got a fantastic high school matchup between the Loyola Blakefield Dons and Garden City kicking things off, and then Colgate Navy in a Patriot League showdown, followed up by Virginia Hopkins, a matchup of two of the sports premier programs that both need a win right now. So, my focus might be a little bit more lacrosse specific at this point, but, certainly feeling the heat of mid-March as well. But, Dave, you mentioned the Arena Football League, but there's the other side of it, too. You're going to be involved in some of the CBS lacrosse broadcasts coming up here in a little bit. Is that right?
Yeah, that is right. It's one of my great pleasures of working at CBS that once basketball season ends, I really kind of transition into an editorial role with all of the lacrosse that we cover between college at the men's and women's scene with NCAA Division I that you're very used to covering, Terry, on the men's side. And then, of course, our affiliations with both professional lacrosse leagues, the NLL and the MLL, quite strong. We had our first women's game on March 11th a few weeks ago, Northwestern Navy. Northwestern pulling out the 15-12 win. Very, very cool games in Annapolis with some cool coaching themes, as Kelly Amante Hiller, of course, played for Cindy Timhall, who at the University of Maryland, who now takes over at Navy, who's a former women's program at this level of virtual varsity lacrosse, having made the transition very successfully to Division I in the Patriot League. And for those people that don't know, our Patriot League ties run very, very deep at CBS Sports Network. The CEO of CBS, Les Moonves, is a Bucknell alum, and we're able to capitalize especially on that partnership come springtime with the high level of lacrosse that's being played in the Patriot League. Our men's lacrosse debut on the network will take place on March 31st as Army actually travels to Colgate, a team that you'll have a chance to see right there in Baltimore. Peter Baum and company repping the Patriot League, and then our first NLL game is actually going to be on April 6th as Paul Rabel and the Philadelphia Wings travel to Rochester, who, of course, just dealt Casey Powell to Colorado. So a lot of fun stuff going on at CBS Sports Network. It's this really is a dream job. What can I tell you?
And, no question, it's an exciting time of year. But before we jump into this week's kind of MCLA coaches pool shakeups, we'd be remiss to not talk about tragedies that befell both the Seton Hill women's lacrosse program as Christina Quigley and their bus driver both died while making a trip across the state of Pennsylvania for a game last Saturday. And that very, very unfortunate accident came quickly on the heels of a bus accident earlier in the week that involved the St. Michael's program out of Vermont. Our prayers are obviously with all of those folks involved. Dave, it's a trying issue, and particularly pertinent given the fact that, in the April issue of Inside Lacrosse Magazine, which is hitting newsstands now, Notre Dame is on the cover of that one. You talked about kind of the challenges of traveling as an MCLA program. Travel has impacted a lot of MCLA programs in ways that, maybe some fans aren't totally familiar with or realize, and to varying degrees, certainly not necessarily as impacted by an incident as sad as what happened to Seton Hill this past weekend, but, a lot of the dangers of and the challenges of traveling coming to the forefront in this piece. It's hard to put a finger on exactly what to say about it, what a solution might be, except to simply say, you know, in the instances in which traveling or some aspect of it is under your control, just do everything you can to be safe. Isn't that right?
Absolutely, Terry. And again, I can't stress enough how deeply we feel for the programs at St. Michael's and Seton Hill, and how our prayers and thoughts are with them. And I thought that it was a very interesting direction that you gave me a little while back when we decided to do this Road Warriors piece for the April edition, to talk about a team travel and kind of how it applies to the competitive logistics side of an MCLA season. But over the course of the rest of my research and the other work that I've been doing, preparing for our May edition of Inside Lacrosse, as well as engineering these podcasts from week to week, I had an opportunity to talk to the coaching staff at Brigham Young University, a very long-standing, well-established MCLA program, and a very unique one as well. It's won multiple national championships, and it's become evident for a long time that they operate and conduct themselves in a way that's really atypical from that of a typical club sports team. And upon talking to that coaching staff, I kind of got the scoop and came to learn that they are part of an extramurals athletic department, kind of run in a virtual varsity fashion that Michigan established a few years ago, where they really exist in their own special little department that has an elevated level from that of typical club sports, but then again falls just below that of NCAA athletes. And the elevation for BYU to go from that of a typical club sport into this extramurals department actually came out of a bus crash in the mid-90s that they experienced. And we'll be talking to head coach Kyle McQuillan from Liberty University, who's our coach of the week and has taken the Liberty Flames to what seems to be their first MCLA Division II tournament via, at the very least, an at-large bid this year. This was a program who was actually a very good SCLC and MCLA team back in 2005, and was actually the victim of a pretty tragic van accident while traveling in Mobile, Alabama. And this accident actually caused them to fold the program for a while, and when they decided to restart up, also did it with an elevated status, higher than that of club sports, to the extent that the administration and the athletic department could really have a strong hold on operations such as team travel in order to minimize risk and optimize safety. So when thinking about all these themes and the things that have happened to some of these smaller NCAA programs and how it affects the MCLA, at the end of the day, it really is hard to pinpoint what really to say about it, other than at whatever level of college sports or college lacrosse you're playing at, always take all the precautions you possibly can when traveling, because especially this time of year with the weather and the far trips that teams are trying to make in order to get teams in, these accidents do happen, and the results can unfortunately can be pretty tragic sometimes.
No question, and I suppose, you know, it's silly and foolish to try to find a silver lining to these types of accidents, but it's good to know that in some past incidents, you know, there have been positives that have come out from it, and we only hope that those positives can continue. But on forward with the Inside Lacrosse MCLA podcast, as we take a look at the Nike Inside Lacrosse coaches poll. And the top 10 is pretty much as you predicted, Dave. You know, certainly continually fantastic seasons coming out of Stanford, Colorado, ASU, and Chapman. And then Michigan State kind of sneaking in despite going 2-1 in their opening weekend.
Yeah, the top 10 more or less shaked out the way that I expected it to. You asked me last week if the Colorado-Stanford dynamic was an issue of quality over quantity, and I actually really expected Colorado, coming off the win over UC Santa Barbara, to make that jump to the two spot over Stanford. Again, the top 10 more or less shakes out the way I expected it to, the main discrepancies being at the 2, 3, 4, and 5 spots, as I really expected Colorado to be at 2, Stanford to be at 3, Chapman, who of course beat Arizona State in overtime, to be at 4, and Arizona State, coming off their big win over BYU, having taken down Davenport as well, I actually expected them to come in at the 5 spot. But as it stands, Colorado State 1, Stanford 2, Colorado 3, Arizona State 4, Chapman 5. BYU falls to the 6th spot, coming off of The loss to Arizona State, but coming back with a win over Arizona. I know that was a big one for Match Next program as they lost to Arizona at a fall ball game in Las Vegas, although it didn't count. BYU was for sure looking for revenge. UCSB stays there at number 7, Oregon at 8, Boston College staying there at 9, and then, yeah, Michigan State going on the road to play Colorado State and Illinois, as well as Minnesota Duluth out in Chicago, going 2-1, and with that, sneaking back into the top 10. They had fallen out into the 11th spot, having not played or having started their season late, but going 2-1 against that high level of competition, a tournament team in Illinois, a ranked opponent in Minnesota Duluth, and then, of course, when you fall to the reigning national with unfair, even by a score of 9-3, I'm still ultimately have tend to have positive effects as far as the way that strength its way into the rankings as far as the top 10 is concerned this week.
And then just outside the top 10, there's a little interesting wrinkle developing between Texas and Sonoma State, as Sonoma was able to get, the Seawolves were able to get a win over Texas earlier this month, 9-8 by the slimmest of margins at home. How do you see that kind of shaping up? And if you're the coach of either team, you know, particularly Andy Garrigan, what would you like to see happen with Sonoma State?
It's an interesting ripple indeed, and I think that Andy Garrigan right now really just has to focus in on winning the Lone Star Alliance. Texas State is a very competitive team that has done an unbelievable job. We've spoken about the lack of strength that comes out of the LSA as a whole. It's a one bid league, and I think that Texas has to work really, really hard to stay focused into winning that title as they're accustomed to in order to earn their ticket to Greenville that way. And then as far as Sonoma State's concerned, Doug Carl will ultimately be rooting for Texas to win that Lone Star Alliance title, because the way that at-large bids work, you know, Sonoma State will, of course, be going for a WCLL automatic qualifying berth themselves, and right there with Cal and even Stanford at the two spot. But at the end of the day, Sonoma should really want Texas to win the LSA and get their bid to Greenville, because as the committee will then figure out the rest of the at-large bids, if Sonoma has a quality win over a team that has rightfully won their conference and gotten AQ that way, it could stand to have positive effects on Sonoma with their at-large hopes when you see the way that shakes out at the 12 and 13 spot in the poll.
And Georgia Tech at 14, best in show in the SCLC?
Yeah, Georgia Tech, Ken Lovick, a former recipient of Franklin's 50 Minutes of Fame this year, continuing to plow on with his defensive headstrong philosophy. And, yeah, they are currently best in show in the SCLC at the 14th spot. Virginia Tech falling down to the 17th spot after their loss out in Colorado. Unfortunately, the Hokies going 0-3. Out in the Centennial State, losing to the Rams, the Buffaloes, and then, of course, to Simon Fraser, who's able to jump back into the poll at 25 after being knocked out last week. But, yeah, when you take a look at the SCLC, it will without question be a watered-down tournament where anyone could essentially emerge essentially between the three powers that be, between Georgia Tech, Georgia, and Virginia Tech. But if there's any positive that comes out of SCLC Division I lacrosse right now in the way that it nationally applies to the MCLA, people should definitely be looking forward to the Georgia Tech Georgia game at the end of the season when compared to other big national rivalry games that we've seen take place toward the end of MCLA seasons, such as Florida State, which will definitely have a little bit of shine off the apple this year in the SCLC, Arizona State, Colorado State, Georgia Tech will certainly be on that national level this year as those teams compete in the regular season. Interesting as well. When you take a look at how the SCLC coincides with the end of the poll, Simon Fraser sneaking back in to the 25 spot.
And then just to kind of round things out, when you look at the bottom of the poll, Grand Canyon and Davenport, two teams that have recently made the jump to Division I, cracking the top 25. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's great. You know, a lot of people had their doubts about both of these programs making the jump to Division I based on past occurrences that happens when the University of San Diego and the University of Montana made their transitions from MCLA Division II, having won championships at that level going into Division I. But the main thing to focus on as far as it's concerned with Grand Canyon and Davenport, and the reason that why they're having a better level of success when compared to those programs in the past is really just the level of school support that they that they get. Davenport is an NAIA institution that has been receiving varsity-like funding and been giving student-athletes full scholarships for many years now through their success winning an MCLA Division II championship. And while Grand Canyon never won an MCLA Division II national championship, this was a school that at one point competed in NCAA Division II lacrosse. They're not an NAIA school, but they were able to find a way to make a transition into the MCLA and ultimately sponsor their MCLA lacrosse team with a varsity-type environment with a special fund that's actually run external to the athletic department. So it's no surprise to me that these teams are seeing success and have broken into the polls. But as far as their tournament hopes are concerned, Grand Canyon obviously has their hands full in the Southwestern Lacrosse Conference when you think about the competition that exists, especially within their region, Arizona, Arizona State, Chapman, UC Santa Barbara. But as far as Davenport is concerned, I think that they really have a chance at both, at least a better chance when compared to Grand Canyon of winning their conference. I think that the CCLA is really wide open right now. Pitt has fallen to the 20th spot in the poll off of their most recent loss to Georgia Tech. Michigan State is a very good team and very deserving of their top 10 ranking right now, but let's not forget that as a Division II team last year, Davenport took the Spartans to overtime, so I think they could still compete at that level. So the CCLA wide open, it's hard to tell how many bids they'll receive. It could be anywhere from 1 to 3, but Davenport certainly within that picture.
It's interesting to see Grand Canyon kind of develop. I remember when news broke earlier this year about their entire athletic department moving Division One. There was some question as to how lacrosse could potentially fit into that mix. I don't necessarily want to say it's entirely disappointing because I don't know how many people would have had their hopes up to think that Grand Canyon was going to be the next Division One school, but certainly for the growth of lacrosse at the Division One level out west, it was a glimmer of hope. Certainly we'll have to pay attention to how they do on the club level to see how things move forward there. But moving on to the Division Two level, Dave, just kind of similar type dynamic at the top in terms of it meeting your expectations, you know, particularly as the time he's back at number one, Westminster receiving a first place vote and St. John's at number three.
Yeah, again, similarly to Division One, Division Two had a top 10 that I more or less expected to shake out in similar fashion as far as the cast of characters are concerned. I really don't understand what justifies Coast Guard jumping Briarcliff into the rankings. Coast Guard hasn't played in a while, and Briarcliff comes off a close loss to a top five team. I'm not sure what justifies that, but as far as the Pioneer League picture is concerned, we certainly will see how these teams will match up as far as their end of the season matchup. Briarcliff, of course, suffered their opening season loss against Rhode Island, a Division I team in the Pioneer League. Coast Guard is, of course, having a very special flag bearer ceremony in their next game against the University of Rhode Island. So we'll see if the Coast Guard Bears can knock off the Rams and really hold that mental edge over Briarcliff. But when it comes right down to it, these teams are going to play each other in a very highly contested battle and an end of the season regular season game as it exists in a regional Division II rivalry. And then, of course, it's very likely that they will meet once again in their regional postseason, where if they do meet in the championship game, Briarcliff will have their bid to Greenville locked up, as the Coast Guard does not compete in nationals. Those student athletes forego nationals every year, whether they qualify or not, from whatever perspective, as they spend that time of year doing special physical and academic oriented training as it applies to the Coast Guard. Guard's schedule. So very interesting dynamics in the top 10. Liberty, of course, a team that I feel as though, along with Palm Beach Atlantic, two SELC teams that locked up at-large bids with their very strong performance out of conference. And we'll talk about how their regional dynamic works a little bit later. But great to see these teams break into the top 10. Liberty at 8, Palm Beach Atlantic at 9. I thought that PBA would actually be at the 10 spot, but good for the Sailfish to jump Briarcliff and be at number 9. But North Dakota State takes Briarcliff's spot at 6. They're coming off of a pretty nice quality win off of Northern Colorado. Dayton, of course, most recently beat Briarcliff. Concordia is doing great things on both sides of the ball right now as far as the Division II picture is concerned in the Southwestern Lacrosse Conference. And then Westminster coming off of a 14-8 loss to Colorado Mesa, an NCAA Division II program. That won't hurt them as far as the NCAA ranks are concerned. And then as far as best in show on a national level in Division II, you can't ignore the two Saints out of the Upper Midwest Lacrosse Conference in St. Thomas and St. John's, Terry.
You mentioned Liberty. Obviously, we're going to be talking to Coach Kyle McQuillan later on in the podcast. Well, I guess that's not obvious. It's going to happen. But they beat Grand Valley, who drops to number 15 in the polls. What are your thoughts on how Grand Valley can shape up over the course of the next little bit here?
It really is a fall for Grand Valley, coming off national championship appearance last year, having to run again, just dealing with some issues, effects really dropping his student athletes focus. They have picked up two quality wins against Western Washington, which shows that they still are the real deal in contention, and they haven't even started their conference schedule yet. But when you look at the rest of Grand Valley's schedule and how it shakes down on the line, with the exception of three games, every contest that they take part in is really an opportunity for themselves to reclaim their mojo and supremacy. They have St. John's next on Friday, who, as you mentioned, is ranked currently number three. While Davenport has made the CCLA transition from Division II to Division I, they, of course, still hold that rivalry game in Grand Rapids near and dear, so it could stand to have positive effects on the Lakers if they're able to knock off Davenport, if that's possible. As far as the three games that don't matter, Aquinas, Ferris State, and Taylor, they should, of course, win those games handily. But, again, North Dakota State is a potential at-large tournament team out of UMLC country, currently ranked number six. That could really help their standing. As it stands right now, the Fighting Sweater Vests out of Indiana Tech are maybe the team to beat in CCLA Division II, and that will be a highly contested game on April 13th. That could help propel the Lakers. And then Dayton, currently ranked number five, best in show as far as CCLA Division II is concerned. That's the last game of the regular season for Grand Valley. So really a lot of opportunities for the Lakers to get back into their swing of things, find their successful style, and make a strong run at Nationals. You know, it's a long drop from the two spots to 15, but to be honest with you, I'm not really worried.
And then jumping down to the bottom of the poll, SCAD and Western Washington, two teams that don't have the record that they want, but certainly have played really strong schedules to this point. How do you feel that they are shaping up, both in terms of, you know, kind of remaining at the level nationally that they would like to? You know, certainly SCAD was a program that we talked a lot about last year, as well as positioning themselves for a spot or an opportunity to claim a spot in the MCLA tournament.
When I take a look at the Savannah College of Art and Design Bees and Mike Cummings program, I think that if there's a program that's fitting of the title, Jekyll and Hyde team in the MCLA, SCAD hit the cake with that one this year. They have some losses that don't seem to make some sense, and some really surprising wins over teams that have performed very well this year, most notably Palm Beach Atlantic in an 11-9 upset. But when you take a look at Palm Beach Atlantic, or rather Western Washington and SCAD, their records aren't very strong, but the level of competition that they've played is very strong, so it more or less justifies their rankings. As far as SCAD is concerned, the way that the Southwest region, or the Southeast region rather, ultimately shakes out in the SD country, as we saw last year, they made the trip national despite the fact that they missed out on the regional tournament. And the same thing could happen this year. It seems as though Palm Beach Atlantic might have sealed up Division II at large bid, but it's quite possible that with the loss they've already had to SCAD and Florida Gulf Coast being a ranked contender, that we could have a similar dynamic as far as that's concerned. And when you take a look at Western Washington in the Pacific Northwest, this is a team that really has had the most success when compared to the other teams out there outside of Western Oregon. So, yeah, their overall record not too strong right now, but they've traveled very far to play some very good teams. So they'll have to suffer a few losses in their way out of the poll. But when it comes right down to it, I believe them, Portland, and Western Oregon, those are really the three top contenders as far as who's going to win the PNCLL in Division II MCLA lacrosse this year.
You mentioned, the SCLC Division II unique playoff format and what that could yield for particularly Palm Beach Atlantic. There was another note that you kind of shared with me that I thought would be interesting to discuss, and that is their goalie situation and a kind of freak injury and how it's impacting the team. Can you just kind of run through that?
Yeah, we'll start with what's going on down in Palm Beach, Florida. A very interesting story with the success that the Sailfish are currently experiencing, and they're doing it without their starting goalie right now, to be honest with you, Terry. Corey Ender is the starting goalie for the Sailfish and had been from the start of the season up until the SCAD game. Really a freak injury. People very unsure of what happened. It came off of a bounce shot. Not sure if it had something to do with the impact of the ball or maybe an errant sharp object on the field or a rock or some sort. But off of a bounce shot, Corey Ender, the starting goalie for Palm Beach Atlantic, got a very large cut, or really a slice, to be honest with you, on his leg that really ranged from the bottom of his hip down to the top of his knee. He went into the hospital to get stitches, and then the next day, ultimately, the wound just didn't heal correctly, and unfortunately, he's dealing with a case of compartment syndrome right now. Terry, I'm not sure if you've ever Google imaged the words compartment syndrome before, but I would advise you not to. The coaching staff at PBA actually sent me a picture of the wound, and it's really not pretty. Luckily, the student athlete is okay. He is in recovery, and he will be fine. He will be able to walk. He will be able to hopefully play lacrosse next season, but it's certainly out of the question this year. But filling in for Corey Ender is actually Ryan Hawks. He's number two on a depth chart of three as far as the goaltending situation in Palm Beach Atlantic is concerned. But the thing about Ryan, Terry, is that he's really a utility player for the Sailfish. Even as the number two goalie in the depth chart, he actually sees time at both midfield and attack, actually scored quite a bit of points over the course of his career and this season, for that matter, while Ender was healthy. But ultimately, Ryan Hawks being taken out of the offensive rotation, filling in goal for Ender successfully, and then of course the offensive production has stayed right there for Coach Southard there at Palm Beach Atlantic. So a really impressive story, and obviously our thoughts and prayers go out to Corey Ender's as he continues to heal from compartment syndrome. But just really great to see a program able to fill in gaps and take a potent scorer from their offensive rotation, put him in goal, and adjust accordingly to still be a national threat.
Well, let's move on from one group of impressive players to another. And Dave, again, inadvertently, well, at least you say it's inadvertently. I'm not sure if it's where the chicken egg argument falls here, but we have your 15 minutes of fame, and we have a unique Canadian offensive player edition. And truthfully, you know, if you look around college lacrosse at pretty much every level, there's almost always going to be a Canadian offensive player edition of Players of the Week in any level. So it was only a matter of time. But Franklin's 15 minutes of fame, what do we got?
Franklin's 15 minutes of fame. We'll start off announcing both players, as you said, certainly a Canadian theme with a bit of a Southwestern Lacrosse Conference focus. Cool to see some really talented offensive Canadian players making their way from north of the border all the way to the likes of Arizona and Southern California. NCAA in professional lacrosse has Zachary and Mark Matthews. Here are their comparative players as far as MCLA Division II is concerned. Our Division I player of the week receiving Franklin's 15 minutes of fame, a player from a Grand Canyon program that has transitioned from NCAA Division II to MCLA Division II to now to MCLA Division I, and that is Carson Bartman, an attackman with sophomore eligibility from Canada, from Edmonton, Alberta, went to St. Francis Xavier Prep, and really having a very impressive season. In his 25-game MCLA career, he's totaled 87 goals and 46 assists for 133 points total. But the most impressive thing to me about Barton, Terry, is the way this program has made a transition. They're playing much better teams this year when compared to last year at the Division II ranks. I mean, you take a look at Grand Canyon's strength of schedule and the conference that they play in. They've played San Diego State, Cal, Arizona, Chapman, Fort Lewis, has been a tournament team out of the RMLC. BYU, a very highly ranked team in Division I that just fell from the two spot to the six spot. Davenport, Minnesota. You take a look at the points he's produced. It's plus five pretty much every game. 10 points against San Diego State. 8 points against Cal Poly. The 10-11 loss that really would have put Grand Canyon on the map. It's really just showing how this guy is able to keep the Lopes really kind of running in stride as far as MCLA Division I lacrosse is concerned. 4 goals and 3 division for with 5 goals against the BYU. Unbelievable defense is very impressive. 5 goals and 2 assists against Davenport, and being a little bit unselfish against Minnesota, going 1-5 for a 6-point performance there. Just a really potent offensive threat in MCLA Division I. And his Division II counterpart is a player who used to play against in conference last year, in the SLC Division II. Of course, Grand Canyon had made the jump, but Concordia still playing in Division II. And while Josh Fagan was their Canadian sniper, who was really more or less on player of the year watch coming into the season, and really had the breakout offensive performance in 2012, it's actually Destin Seguin from Calgary, Alberta, who's really carrying the offensive torch for Concordia this year. Again, a Canadian attackman with a little bit of a larger frame when compared to that of Fagan and Barton. But again, the numbers are just very impressive. In two scrimmages to start the season against UCLA, they actually beat UCLA 9-6. He had 6 points in that game. Three goals against Chapman, you know, a Division One team, and Concordia is still in Division Two, so for them to challenge themselves, even in a scrimmage environment against Chapman, and for this young man to score a hat trick against them, really shows what his offensive capabilities are. Three goals and one assist against St. Mary's. Four goals against the number one team in the country in St. Thomas, off 7-14 loss. He accounted for four, more than half of the seven goals that the Lopes were able to produce in that game. Three goals and four assists against Portland. Went 2-1 against San Diego, and again, a Division One team at the MCLA, or rather UC San Diego. They play in Division Two. Two goals and four assists against UC Irvine. 3-2 against Cal State Long Beach, and again, Fort Lewis, a contender in Division Two out of RMLC country. Five goals and three assists. So when you take a look at these multiple point performances by these two Canadian snipers, Terry, and in the part of the country that they're doing it in, MCLA lacrosse, just very impressive to see. Maybe, you know, they both have box lacrosse backgrounds, maybe potential to NFL draft picks out of these future guys, Terry.
And on the coaches' side?
In Division One, we're actually going to share the honors this year. I really had trouble deciding if I wanted to give the honors to John Galvin from the University of Colorado, currently ranked number three in the Nike Inside Lacrosse poll, coming off of that big 6-4 win over UC Santa Barbara. Again, as far as that 2-3 dynamic is concerned in the poll, it stands to reason last week that Colorado was in the three spot, was ranked below Stanford when you take in consideration their like opponent in Oregon. Colorado only beat Oregon by one. Stanford doubled up on the Ducks 14-7, but it took overtime for Stanford to beat UC Santa Barbara. The University of Colorado was able to beat them in regulation 6-4, held the Gauchos to four goals, and beating them in regulation, the poll is often more about what have you done for me lately. So I expected Colorado to jump to the number two spot in the poll, but my predictions did not come to fruition. Should not take away from the efforts of John Galvin and the job that he's done at Colorado. An Ohio Wesleyan graduate who really built the Colorado program up, actually took some time away from the program and rejoined them last year, and they've had a lot of success since. And again, by employing Marty Taffett, a star defenseman from the Buffaloes, who also had Division I experience playing at St. John, just a wise coaching move and stands to reason as to why they can hold a team like UCSB to four goals, also behind their play of their stellar goalie, who's quickly jumping into the player of the year consideration. And then the counterpart sharing the Franklin's 15 minutes of fame honors in Division I is our friend Chris Malone at Arizona State. A really impressive win over BYU, a 2011 championship game. I spoke to Coach Malone going into the week. He's quick to tell me contact with Minnesota, which he won't 26. But he did not beat BYU. Was a priority for him and his team. He had never beaten BYU in the time that he had spent at Arizona State, and the charm came through this time. And then again, to knock off Davenport 15-9 after beating Minnesota 23-6, and then to really elatedly take down a national rival in BYU. Davenport is a team that we might see in the MCLA Division I tournament, and Coach Malone was also diligent to tell me in the preseason that Davenport was a game that he had circled on his calendar. Did not want to overlook the Panthers as a varsity-sponsored former MCLA Division II national champion. He thinks that the Panthers are for real. So John Galvin and Chris Malone sharing the Division I honors for Franklin's 15 minutes of fame. And as we get to bring in our podcast guest, Terry, it should be no surprise that our Division II Coach of the Week is our guest from Liberty University, head coach Kyle McQuillan.
And the Inside Lacrosse MCLA podcast continues with Coach Kyle McQuillan of the Liberty Flames as they are off to an 8-0 start. And Coach McQuillan, I know, you know, you're a lacrosse coach and certainly, you know, basketball has very little to do with your job, but I've noticed a little bit of a trend as far as, and it's March Madness season, so I feel like we're on even footing to be able to ask this, but, in 2010, Duke wins a basketball national championship. The men's lacrosse team turns right around and wins their own national championship. Just last season, Loyola, my alma mater, had its one of its best men's basketball seasons in a long time, and then the lacrosse team turns around. And here, the Liberty Flames make it to the NCAA men's basketball tournament, and you guys are off to an 8-0 start. Is this just a simple coincidence, or is there something going on here?
I'm not sure about that. I know that the basketball team, I know we got a lot of press in the news the last couple of weeks of being one of the very few teams to ever make the tournament with a 20-loss season. But at the end of the day, we were there. They had a good run. Unfortunately, just a couple nights ago, we were knocked out by, I believe, North Carolina A&T in a really close game. So I don't know. We'll see. I think that the athletics at Liberty University, we all kind of feed off each other's success, definitely. I know we were up on a spring break trip last week, and everywhere we'd go, people were like, oh, you're Liberty University, and because of all the press we were receiving for making the tournament, good or bad, we were in the news, which is a good thing. So hopefully we can kind of feed off of each other's success here, and we can make a run of our own. So,
Coach, I was pretty disappointed. Liberty was actually my pick in the first four in all of my brackets, and for it to come down to the last possession, I thought – we were in for an early buzzer beater and a real March Madness special there, but a great run by the Flames regardless. Coach, back on the lacrosse side, every opponent that you've faced that I've had the opportunity to talk to after you've played them has mentioned a different player really being the focal point to your team. People have told me that your goalie, Ethan Kamholtz, has stood on his head. Ryan Miller is a freshman who's actually received Franklin's 50 Minutes of Fame on this podcast. And at the same time, you have Bryce Marakovich, who's also a very talented freshman. You have a transfer from the University of Delaware who does some great things for you. Just take a moment to talk about all these amazing student athletes who have really made Liberty lacrosse as successful as you've been this year.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're still definitely a young program. We were reinstated back in 2010, I'm amazed with the amount of kids that we've been able to pull in to year out. The kids that you mentioned are definitely some of our stud lacrosse players for sure. We've got a lot of different kids in a lot of different positions that are very dangerous. At the end of the day, what I think is great about that is it just makes us very dangerous. We're a really well-balanced team. I've been a part of teams, especially in the MCLA and back to my playing days when I played at Liberty, where you kind of have your all-star lacrosse player and your offense kind of runs through him. We're just not one of those teams anymore, fortunately. We've got a lot of balance. If you take a look at our stat sheet, we've got five players in the top 15 in the SELC for points per game. So I think, unfortunately, I was telling the guys the other day at practice that we're probably not going to have a guy, like for instance, last year, Kurt Tobias led the SELC in points. And I told him, unfortunately, I don't think we're going to have very many of those anymore just because we are so balanced. We move the ball really well. We spread the scoring out. I think we've got about eight different players on our roster who've scored, nine different players on our roster who've scored this season. So it's a good problem to have. We're very fortunate to have the players that have come in into our systems. Liberty's done a great job since really getting its start in 1971. We're a really young school, so they've grown a lot, and the students that we're able to bring in, a lot of it, obviously, we're doing some cool things with lacrosse, and kids are excited about that, but at the end of the day, they're coming here for an education, and Liberty's done an awesome job of creating a university that kids want to come to, and we're able to add lacrosse to the mix, so it makes my job as a coach a lot easier. But yeah, so you mentioned those guys. We've got Kurt Tobias, who was our point scorer leader last year. We've got Derek Harewood as a Mitty, who leads our team in assists and has 30 points overall. But like I said, we've got five players with over 30 points this season. So it's like what you like to see as a coach, some balance, and it gives us a bit of an advantage because when teams are looking at us and taking a look at stats, it's hard for them to isolate in on five different players that are effective with the ball. So.
A lot of coaches around the country would certainly like to be leading a team that has five guys who are averaging around 4 points a game. So I would imagine that's a nice little, card to have in your back pocket. But, you know, just kind of taking a little bit of a wider view, you mentioned the program being reinstated in 2010, and you've been the coach for the last 4 years after, you know, spending time there as a player. Can you, for fans that are unfamiliar with kind of the history and the trajectory and the arc of the program and the school, you know, it was marked by a pretty significant incident. Can you just kind of bring fans up to speed with what Liberty Lacrosse has had to deal with over the course of the last decade?
Yeah, definitely. I attended Liberty University in 2003 as a freshman. Picked up the sport of lacrosse. It was pretty new to me. I'd played some box lacrosse up north, but field lacrosse was new to me. But I played from 2003 to 2005 when we were down on spring break, and unfortunately, like most programs, it was completely student run. So we'd rented some vans, and we'd gotten into a pretty bad accident just outside of Mobile, Alabama, on our spring break trip. Sent about 10 guys to the hospital, 6 of them pretty serious injuries. It's a blessing and a miracle that nobody was killed that day. But definitely was a huge shot to our program and to our guys. We threw together what we had left of our team. Our team was pretty much with the players that were, still in the hospital and dealing with injuries, subtracting also the players that, just wanted to kind of be done with the season and kind of move on. Our roster was cut well in half. So we were able to finish out that season. And again, that was 2005. 2006, I took over as captain and president. And tried to fight our way through a lot of issues. But between, there were a lot of legal things that kind of popped up and a lot of safety, different, issues that we had to deal with. The next season was pretty tough. And our job was just trying to keep that thing on the tracks. And unfortunately, kind of unraveled on us near the end of 2006, which forced, unfortunately, my senior year, for us to not to be able to have a team. We had to pull out of the MCLA. And a lot of it just stemmed around the accident, unfortunately, just due to the fact that, had a lot of guys, from that 2005 team, obviously just with the injuries, just not able to play the sport of lacrosse, not able to play anything, a matter of fact. And a lot of kids that just weren't really comfortable getting in vans, and I don't blame them, and traveling and doing those things. So it was a tough incident. But again, I give all the credit in the world, and I think the thing that I take away from this is being a player and being a part of that program. When they called me in 2010, and I was still in the area, and they knew my connection with the program, when they called me and said they had an interest in bringing this thing back, I was thrilled because I guess it was one of those things that was kind of on my bucket list, not being able to play lacrosse my senior year and not having the opportunity to field a team was something that just, it really bothered me. Lacrosse was a saving grace for me in my life. And, when I came to Liberty as a freshman, it really connected me with an awesome group of guys and into a sport that, I love, dearly. So I've got a lot to owe to the sport of lacrosse. So the ability to be able to come back in 2010, restart this program, has been awesome. And I think the real story here, for us at least, is just, Liberty University and what they've been able to do. They took a really bad situation that, unfortunately we were in 2005, and they've turned it into an awesome department, which they, which we're now a part of, athletically, our club sports department, where all of our student athletes are well taken care of in terms of transportation and athletic training, academic advising. Our athletics, within club sports is phenomenal. I think would go toe to toe with any program in the country. They've really taken a situation. They've learned from it. They've made the corrections. I think all the credit needs to go to Liberty and what they've been able to do, because their support of not just our program, but the athletics on campus. We have very competitive hockey programs, wrestling, volleyball, all that compete outside of the NCAA. And they do an absolutely tremendous job of supporting and fostering support for those programs.
Kyle, just a really interesting dynamic to think about and talk about, coming off of a week where national lacrosse press unfortunately revolved around two bus accidents in the NCAA lacrosse ranks, and
also comparatively interesting to speak about how a similar incident affected BYU in the mid-90s, also affecting their school to install an extramurals athletic department to their club sports program to really separate those from who are traveling nationally, representing the school on a high level from that of varsity sports and other clubs. But coming off of that, when you and I had a chance to speak earlier in the week, if the fans have yet to recognize your accent, you come from north of the border, having a little bit of a box lacrosse grounds in Canada, found Liberty way through American football, which was an interesting dynamic. But you've done quite a little bit of traveling all that life, coming from a military family, from your dad being a three-star general in the Canadian Army. You've spent time north of the border in Colorado, as well as there in the Virginia area. And you've managed to incorporate both the themes of family and militaristic views into your program. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I grew up in a military family, so rules and order are just kind of a part of my DNA. We kind of thrive on structure and setting clear expectations, so it's kind of natural for me to make that a part of our team. My dad, as you mentioned, he was military for 35 years and just retired last year, and has always been a part of my athletics, coached me throughout my career playing football for a very long time. So one day when we were just kind of talking, and I gave him the opportunity or the option to come down and see if he wanted to try helping us out with lacrosse, he kind of jumped at it, and he's been down here helping us this season. I think it's been a great addition. He's done an amazing job. He's more of a defensive mind than I am, so he's been able to come in and do some tremendous things with our defense, which, again, we talked about all of our offensive threats and how we're really well balanced. I think one of the things that goes undervalued when it comes to Liberty lacrosse is our defense. I think we've let one team score double digits on us, and we're letting about 6.375 points against per game. So our defense takes a lot of credit in where we are today. And I think as we go on and we start pushing forward and playing tougher teams, I think the defense is really going to be what's going to separate us from those teams. But again, he's been a huge addition. It's awesome to have him around and expose him to just the sport of lacrosse and these guys and the culture that we're trying to create here. If you ask my guys, I'm not sure if they would agree. I think they've done more push-ups and sprints in the last year than they've done in the last two seasons combined. But it's good. We're working hard. I think that these guys, they came on and we told them from the very beginning that this is going to be a full-time commitment. And that they're going to put a lot of work into this thing, and they've done that so far, and it's starting to pay off. So, but yeah, it's great having him here, and I think his value is going to be shown throughout the rest of this season as our defense, I hope, gets a little bit more recognition. So,
Coach McQuillan, I like to give Dave a fair amount of flack for his SCLC ties. Certainly, you know, those have been well documented here on the podcast. But I'm curious as to your view on the conference and its place in the MCLA at large. You know, oftentimes because of its postseason success or out-of-conference success, whatever the case may be, you know, sometimes it doesn't get necessarily a ton of credit on the national level. But at the same time, your team just went and beat four CLA teams in a row. And, you know, so to a degree, it's a very dynamic and just, you know, when you take that into account and add it to the scope and size of the league, just what are your thoughts on kind of how the SCLC's place in the MCLA currently rests and maybe what its future is?
Yeah, I think the SCLC is a tremendous conference within the MCLA. It's obviously one of the biggest, but obviously just being the biggest doesn't always make you the best. I think that we are definitely on the up. I think that this season is going to be the one that starts turning some heads, hopefully, and starts getting some recognition for the SCLC. And I hope that Liberty is one of the teams leading that push. Lacrosse in the South, it's taken a little bit longer to catch on, but it's definitely caught on full force down here in the South. And I just continue to see the SCLC grow. But in terms of thinking of the SCLC as an elite conference, I have to be completely honest and say that it's probably fair to say that we're not. And I guess just a simple reason for the fact is that, and you guys may be able to correct me, but going back, I think within 6 years, I don't think there's been an SCLC that's gotten out of the second round of the national tournament. So again, you take a look at some programs that are there every single year. A team that comes to mind in the Division II, you see St. Thomas, who's there year in and year out. And, so if you're trying to describe an elite team or an elite conference, unfortunately the SCLC just hasn't had those programs. But, that being said, I think that, we're hopefully going to see a turn here. I hope that, Liberty is one of those teams that is able to kind of turn the page for the SCLC. And we've got way too many teams and way too many great athletes in the South here for us to be dormant for very much longer. And I think you see that in the play of teams like Palm Beach and some of the other programs in the SCLC that have kind of come out of nowhere and had some great seasons. And I think that was what was important to us this year. A lot of people kind of gave us some flack, especially my players going up north for spring break. And I told them quite simply, we can stay in the SCLC and we can continue to play, but in all honesty, where I felt we would be able to earn some respect was to go north and play some of the programs that have been there and done that. So we've done that, and hopefully next year I told them we may be able to make a trip south, but I thought it was important to go north and play some of those programs that have some history and some culture, especially at the national level. So as we move forward, again, like I said, I hope the SCLC is one of those conferences on the up and up, and I think they are, and I hope that Liberty's at the forefront of that.
And just kind of to follow up on that, you play in a region of the SCLC with some, you know, high-profile programs, Davidson being one, but this year in particular, Elon being 7-1, another. What are your concerns about them, those two, and the rest of your regional competition in general?
Yeah, I mean, as successful as we've been so far at 8-0, the thing that we kind of have to remind ourselves is that we haven't done anything to move or advance our effort in making the playoffs. We haven't played any of our regional games, and we do that on purpose. We try to schedule our regional games closer to the end of the year. But the first one is coming up this weekend. We play Davidson on Saturday on campus here at Liberty University. And they just came off of a tough loss against Elon, I think, losing by 1 point. So obviously I feel like they're going to give us a pretty good shot here, and not overlooking any team and not stepping past Davidson, because we've definitely got to play that game first. But I'd be lying if I think it would be an understatement, I guess I would say, if I said that we had the Elon game circled on our calendar. Back to when I was a player, Elon has been our biggest rival. And if I'm completely honest, I don't recall as a player, and I know as a coach, ever actually getting the better of them. Elon's kind of been the top dog in our region, and in a lot of ways the SCLC for a long time. They've got a great program. They've got a great culture of success, and a lot of success over the years. So I guess last year is bringing up painful memories. We played Elon twice. We played them in the regular season with the opportunity to knock them out of the playoffs. They had one loss at that time, and end up losing in Elon by 1 point at the very end. And then again met them in the semifinals of the SCLC tournament, and lost again by 1 point. And they went on eventually to go win the SCLC championship. So again, not taking anything away from Elon, they're a great program. But our guys, if there's a game that they've been waiting for an entire year, it's definitely that game. It's our last home game of the season at Liberty. We've got them at home, so we're really excited. We know they're going to give us a good game. We've always got a great competition between ourselves and Elon, but I really hope that this is the year that we can move past. And I tell the guys that we need to make sure that the SCLC championship runs through Elon or Lynchburg, Virginia, rather than Elon, North Carolina this year. So that's our goal, and we've got a few weeks to get ready for it, but we're all looking forward to that game immensely.
Coach McQuillan, well said. Way to represent the conference. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. And if you take a look at the SCLC postseason results from 2008 and 2009, you'll go to see how Emory probably feels about the Elon lacrosse program. But getting off the scope of the SCLC, we just announced our Players of the Week receiving Franklin's 15 Minutes of Fame in our very notable podcast segment. And we actually had two Canadian players, much like yourself, were really breaking onto the scene as offensive threats. And the most interesting thing to me is that these are two Canadian guys, not playing necessarily at Simon Fraser University or a school in the Pacific Northwest, but rather in the Southwestern Lacrosse Conference. in the likes of Arizona and Southern California. Speak to how the Canadian influence has really grown in the MCLA, and for that matter, how you're looking to further install some of your fellow Canucks in the recruiting program at Liberty University.
Yeah, being from Canada, I've got a little bit of experience with lacrosse up north. It's changed quite a bit since I've come south of the border. I grew up playing a lot of box lacrosse, which is still very popular, but field lacrosse, I would say, is still kind of catching on. There's Simon Fraser. There's a few colleges that allow you the opportunity to play field lacrosse, but overwhelmingly, I feel like Canada is a huge untapped resource. I think you're seeing at the NCAA level a lot of Canadians making their way south and doing some damage at the collegiate level. And we're hoping to do the same. I've got a lot of, obviously being from Canada, a lot of family up north, a lot of friends, a lot of contacts. I spend a fair bit of the summer going up and trying to make some connections. We're bringing in a few Canadian kids next year to our program. So again, there's a little bit, the kids that have played box, I think my opinion on it is that, when you play box, it's a condensed version of the game. You play on an ice rink without the ice. So you've got the boards and all the rest of it. But I think when you allow a player, who's got good stick skills and has kind of been forced to play the game in a condensed environment, and give him the ability to open things up, and you give him a field. I know in my experience, not being the biggest guy, but being able to excel with some speed, and that's what we're very much about at Liberty is our speed game, giving me the ability to kind of spread my wings, give me some space, was huge, and that's how I fell in love with the field lacrosse game. So again, we're trying to definitely bring in some northern help in for next year. The sport of lacrosse is growing just as fast up north as it is down south, and just to get away from the cold winters isn't reason enough for these guys. I'm not sure. I know that's the reason I think I came south and stayed. So we're hoping to have a lot of success drawing some kids from up north down to Liberty, and I think a lot of programs around the SCLC and just MCLA in general are probably going to have some success in doing it as well. I think the MCLA's got some great programs. It's got some great teams and offers a lot of opportunity for kids up north to be able to play field lacrosse at the collegiate level, which is awesome.
Well, Coach McQuillan, we want to thank you for your time, but we want to get you out of here on one more question, and that is that, you know, as a relatively close-by neighbor, Richmond makes the transition from the MCLA level to the NCAA Division I level, leaving behind a little bit of a gap in a conference region that you could potentially fill. What do you see as being the possibility that your program makes the jump and just kind of, in general, the future of Liberty Lacrosse?
Yeah, we when I played as a student athlete, we were in the same division as we are currently, Division II. But when I came back in 2010, our goal obviously was to be playing at the highest level, not taking anything away from the Division II teams, because in all honesty, there's a lot of very competitive teams within the Division II. It is our goal that this is probably going to be our last year at the Division II. We're taking we've got our meetings with the SCLC in September, and I've let them know that if everything goes the way that we would like and we get acceptance, that we'll be moving into Division I next year and hopefully being able to take that spot where Richmond is kind of vacated. So I think that it's definitely early. Like I said, this is just our third year as a program, but I hope this year's we're going to be able to go out with a bang and show some programs and show some teams that we're ready for this transition. We've scheduled two Division I opponents. We played George Washington early on in the season, and we're able to get a victory on the road. And we're traveling up to University of Richmond, actually, on the 5th of April to try to test ourselves against a Division I opponent as well. So we're hoping to, like I said, go up with a big bang. I told these guys that I would love to be able to do it with an SCLC championship and run at nationals, and that's our goal. But yeah, moving forward, I think Liberty athletically, I think we belong in Division I. I think that we can compete, and that's definitely the direction that we're going to be trying to take this thing for next season. So we're really excited about that. It's great for recruiting. It's great for the program. And I know it was a goal of ours and the guys that I played with way back when. So to kind of see it hopefully come to fruition here within the next year or so it is going to be great to see and great for our program.
Well, Coach Kyle McQuillan, Liberty Flames, thank you so much for joining us on the Inside Lacrosse MCLA podcast. We really appreciate your time. Congratulations on the success so far and the hot start, and good luck keeping it rolling.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
A tremendous look at the Liberty Lacrosse program, courtesy of Coach Kyle McQuillan, and we want to thank him again for his time joining us on the podcast. Dave, a couple of before we get into the previews and predictions for this weekend's contests, a couple of midweek games to catch folks up on. Primarily, Sonoma and Richmond, as the Seawolves get an 11-8 win over the Spiders. What does that mean for, I guess, both programs as we look towards late March and into April?
Well, Terry, at the tail end of that interview, we actually talked about Richmond quite a bit, as we see now that Liberty might look to fill that void in SCLC Division I that Richmond will leave behind when they make the NCAA transition in 2014. And, of course, Liberty plays Richmond later this season April 5th on Richmond's home turf. But on that note, yeah, Richmond had a game last night against Sonoma State. I thought a very interesting and important one as far as the MCLA National Tournament bubble picture is concerned. You asked me earlier in the podcast what Sonoma State's win over Texas ultimately means. And again, this was another quality win for Sonoma State as far as building their resume outside of the WCLL. So if Stanford or Cal Poly should win the WCLL, I think that it's Cal Poly has fallen pretty far from grace. So Sonoma State probably the number two competitor there. But again, if Stanford wins the WCLL as expected, and if the Seawolves should have to rely on an out-of-conference resume, the Texas and Richmond wins will be what the selection committee reverts back to. And as far as Richmond is concerned, still in my opinion, the most dangerous unranked team in the MCLA. As far as their implications in the postseason shapes up, they still have the game against Pittsburgh, which might help them as far as the at-large picture is concerned, but I think that ship has more or less sailed for Dan Chamati, Glenn Carter, and the Spiders. But as far as the way the SCLC playoffs work, and as crazy as it might be in the Division II scene and how ultra-competitive it is and how we might see an MCLA tournament team get left out of the regional postseason, I think that the lack of strength in the SCLC North region might really help out the Spiders in this juncture. Virginia Tech is really the only powerful team that they compete against within their region of the SCLC. I think that outside of Tennessee, Kentucky, and West Virginia, GW, only a first-year program in the MCLA under the guidance of Joe Oppen, is really Richmond's biggest threat for the two spot in that region. But I see Richmond falling behind Virginia Tech as the second team from that region to make it into the SCLC postseason. And as it is every year, the SCLC tournament is just really wide open as who can emerge. Obviously, Georgia Tech and Virginia Tech are the three big players to watch right now, but Richmond is a dangerous team. They have a lot of talent. They're coached at a high level for the most part, and considering that it looks like they will sneak into the SCLC postseason, you really can't take your eye off of them with the way that that conference tournament ultimately plays out.
And around the rest of B1 on Friday, we've got Utah versus Grand Canyon, Northeastern versus New Hampshire in a big Pioneer League showdown. And then moving on to Saturday, Dave, what are some of your thoughts for how D1 will shape up this weekend?
Well, those two games that you just mentioned are very important. I think Grand Canyon has a chance to really stretch their muscles against Utah, who's really the fourth big team out of the RMLC in Division I, and Northeastern New Hampshire should be a nice little Pioneer League game to help get the Huskies going in their early section of the season. But as we look into Saturday, some really interesting games. Oregon-Cal should prove to be interesting. Two teams in different conferences on the West Coast, but an opportunity for Cal to build their out-of-conference at-large resume. Again, really competing as the number two team in the WCLL in front of Sonoma and behind Stanford as far as how that picture kind of plays out. Cal Poly kind of being the fourth place team as it currently stands. Buffalo has two interesting games. They're playing Michigan State on Saturday and Davenport on Sunday. If Buffalo should fail to win one of these games, it will come right back to the Pioneer League where they compete with Northeastern and Boston College. Buffalo really has done a good job of winning those tournaments as of late, but as far as building their out-of-conference resume, Buffalo hasn't been too strong, so beating a Michigan State or a Davenport team that might go on to win the CCLA championship is very pivotal for the Bulls. Sonoma, Virginia Tech,
big bubble game for both of those teams. Again, Sonoma looking to get a third quality win that will go along with Richmond and Texas as they compete with Cal and Stanford for WCLL supremacy. And Virginia Tech falling as who they were best in show as far as the SCLC is concerned, coming off of their own 3-weekend in Colorado, have now fallen to be the number three team in that conference. So this is really an opportunity for them into the polls and reclaim a mental edge as far as the regional picture is concerned. And then Sonoma also plays Pittsburgh, which should have some great out-of-conference bubble implications as both teams. Sonoma has just done an amazing job crafting their schedule and really protecting themselves if they should not manage to beat Cal or Stanford. But, Terry, one of the most interesting dynamics to me as far as the Division I previews are concerned for this week, Chapman going out to play Colorado and Colorado State. Chapman's best player, in my opinion, a guy that we featured in the February edition of Inside Lacrosse Magazine, I believe, Hap Knowles, the Chapman long stint mini. He's actually a Colorado transfer. He played 2 years in Boulder and actually played against Chapman both years and lost, transferred to Chapman last year and then knocked off the Buffaloes in Orange County. Now Hap Knowles travels back to Boulder to play on his former field. Again, he was on the losing side of this rivalry twice in Colorado, picked up a win last year against Chapman. Colorado is currently the higher ranked team. Colorado has the home field advantage. I've had the opportunity to talk to both coaching staffs about this game. And the fact of the matter is that the Hap Knowles' transfer from Colorado to Chapman was pretty amiable. He wanted to be closer to home in Southern California. He has aspirations to work in the real estate market after graduation in his home state and in his home region. So he felt that it was apparently the real estate program within the Colorado Business School was not necessarily to his preferences. And again, wanting to be involved in the real estate market closer to home was a priority. So he made the transfer amiably, according to Marty Taffin and John Galvin. He still has a lot of buddies on the team of Colorado. This will not be his first back trip back to Boulder since his transfer. He's actually been back in the offseason to visit friends and catch a few football games. So just a really interesting dynamic there as a transfer rivalry exists in friendly terms. And the implications of Chapman going out to play those two teams in Colorado could really shake up the top five in next week's poll if Chapman should get a win. And then in a rematch of the 2007 National Championship game, Oregon having to deal with Cal on Saturday, on Monday will actually play the BYU Cougars, who are looking to bounce back from their loss against Arizona State.
Tough slate this weekend for the Ducks, no doubt. And as we move on to Division II, kicking things off on Friday, Grand Valley versus St. John's, one that we already discussed as far as impacting Grand Valley's, you know, kind of the course of the trajectory of the rest of their season, and Grove City, Washington University. It's not the only big game for WashU this weekend. Dave, can you just run through some of the other big D2 matchups of the weekend?
Yeah, as you mentioned, Grove City, who's now really kind of emerging as a potential threat to Grand Valley in the CCLA, along with that of Dayton and the likes of what we've seen out of that conference, plays WashU and should what be a pretty pivotal out of conference bubble matchup. And the theme kind of continues there for WashU in the CCLA as they will take on Indiana Tech on Saturday. Indiana Tech, Terry Nichter and the Warriors, rumored some potentially also similar to that of Liberty next year. What we've seen out of both Davenport and Grand Canyon, it's been rumored that Indiana Tech, who might just be the best team in the CCLA this season, maybe also looking to make that transition to MCLA Division I next year. So with Indiana Tech and the schedule that they've played, it's really hard to gauge how strong they are with the losses they've experienced with the tough opponents that they've had. But this WashU game should really be a nice litmus test, a nice indicator, as WashU is a tournament team coming out of an AQ with the GRLC. And as Indiana Tech has yet to even make their first MCLA Division II tournament, they might be the best team in their conference this year and might look to be that breakout team. And for that matter, similarly to Grand Canyon, make a quick transition into Division I off of what might be their first ever Division II tournament. But that Saturday matchup should really spell out a lot for both teams. And staying in the Midwest, a nice little CCLA-UMLC matchup. St. John's, coming off of a CCLA game with Grand Valley, will then play another CCLA Titan in Dayton. Again, Indiana Tech, Dayton, and Grand Valley being the big three in the CCLA. UCLA, while Grove City kind of awaits in the wing. This is the fourth spot. Briarcliff and Stonehill, as far as the region is concerned, if you were to ask Sean Michael Pagano who he looks out for in conference beside Coast Guard, who, again, he doesn't have to worry about too much come postseason time because Coast Guard is not eligible for the national tournament, but it is the Stonehill Skyhawks who could potentially knock off Briarcliff year in and year out, and for that matter, take their spot in the Pioneer League Championship game against Coast Guard and take that bid to nationals. So that Saturday matchup should be big as Briarcliff looks to rebound from the loss to Dayton and tries to find an offensive identity once again without the injured star in John Bonacore. The Davidson Liberty game, Coach McQuillan actually alluded to that, and as we talk about the SCLC playoff picture and how the regions work out and shape up and how highly ranked teams with big out-of-conference national wins can ultimately slip within their region and with that be left out of the SCLC playoff picture. This Davidson Liberty game should be an interesting one to take a look at. Davidson has had a real resurgence in their program recently. They're coming off of a one-goal loss to Elon, who has historically been the best team out of SCLC Division II out of late. So if Liberty should beat Davidson, it should more or less rest people's worries about the SCLC North region in Division II and ultimately having a Liberty team get left out of the SCLC postseason. I think they'll win that game and ultimately secure their spot in the SCLC postseason in addition to what they've already seemingly done on the national level as far as their bid there is concerned. Western Oregon, North Dakota State is an interesting West Coast bubble matchup as Western Oregon competes with Portland and Western Washington, as far as the big three in that region, while North Dakota State, is by far definitively the number three team in the UMLC with St. Thomas and St. John's. And then Indiana Tech taking on St. John's. So both WashU and Indiana Tech, along with that of St. John's and Grand Valley, those teams playing a lot of very, interesting out of conference games that might go to scope the rest of their season in the way that it applies to the MCLA National Tournament.
Well, Dave Franklin, that's going to do it for a marathon, epic MCLA Inside Lacrosse podcast. I want to thank you again for joining us. I want to wish you the best as you survive the first weekend of March Madness, and we will talk to you again next week.
Yeah, Terry, I appreciate it, man. It's only about 2 hours until I have to be at a CBS studios for a 14-hour shift of college basketball, but it's an exciting time of year. Really happy and honored to be on board with you guys at Inside Lacrosse, carrying the media flag for the MCLA. Always a pleasure to do it with you, my friend.
Inside Lacrosse Podcast.